This is episode number 70 of the Fearless Presentations podcast, the fastest, easiest way to eliminate public speaking fear.
Want to absolutely eliminate public speaking fear? This podcast is the answer. Here's the guy who literally wrote the book on fearless presentations, Doug Stannert.
Welcome to the Fearless Presentations podcast. This is Doug Stannert, CEO of the Leaders Institute and Fearless Presentations. And this is the podcast that helps people just like you become more confident and poised presenters and tap into more of your leadership potential. This is podcast number 70, and it's a continuation of the series that I've been covering each week on how to start a public speaking career. This one is kind of the culmination of what we've talked about so far. So in prior weeks, we've talked about how to become a professional speaker in your current career or basically doing what you're doing now. We've talked about how to use public speaking as marketing in your current career. And then last week, we also talked about how to go and work for another speaking company in order to get some experience. In this episode, we're going to talk about how to start your own public speaking career from scratch. So if you want to go out and be a professional speaker and maybe it's something that you've never done before, we're going to show you a step-by-step process to help you hit the ground running when you start a public speaking career. Now, this episode is brought to you by fearlesspresentations.com. Because I've got so much content, I'm not going to kind of give a commercial here or anything, but if you are interested in becoming a professional speaker or even just getting better at speaking in front of a group, make sure and visit fearlesspresentations.com. We got classes coming up basically in 30 or 40 different cities around the world, and we got about four or five different classes going on every single week in cities all over the place. So if you're interested in Fearless Presentations or attending one of our classes, make sure and go to fearlesspresentations.com and check us out. So let's get on with today's podcast. So on today's episode, we're going to talk about how to start an entire public speaking career or a public speaking company from scratch. How do you actually do that? That's one of the things that people kind of ask me about quite often. They're like, how did you get started? And I always tell people that the way that I did this is not the way that you want to do it, because I did it the hard way. But I've helped other people create public speaking careers in my career. I've trained a lot of speakers, trained a lot of trainers, done a lot of train-the-trainer type stuff. And I've kind of found some shortcuts that I wish I had known about when I was starting my career. And this is just a few of those things and some things that you can do right now to help start to create a public speaking career. So this is part five, by the way, of a five-part series. But what you're going to find out is that as we go further along in the podcast, there's a good chance I'm probably going to do a part six of part five, part six next week of part five. And we'll kind of talk about that toward the end of the podcast. Basically, in the previous sessions, though, we talked about I did an overview of how to start a career from scratch and gave you a few really good tips and techniques. And then all the remaining sessions that we've done have just been where we've gone and clarified or given you additional information about each one of those tips. So, like, for instance, in the second episode, we talked about how to become a professional speaker, staying within the career that you're in now, which, by the way, that's my favorite. That's the best way that I know to become a professional career is just to continue what you're doing and just start speaking more. The third episode, the second point that we covered was how to use public speaking as marketing for your current career. And then finally, what we did last week was we talked about different ways that you can go and start working for other companies and gain some experience speaking. So in this session, though, we're going to talk about if none of those things have worked for you and you just really, really going to want to be on your own, you really, really want to start your own company, these are some things that you can do. Now, I hate to kind of tell people what not to do, because most of the time when I say, hey, don't do this thing, for some reason, the human brain doesn't hear the word not, and it basically makes people want to do these things. But I'm going to strongly, strongly, strongly dissuade you from doing the first couple of things. I'm going to give you some of the don'ts about public speaking or becoming a professional speaker anyway. The first thing that you don't want to do is you don't want to try to become a motivational speaker. Now, the reason why I cover this one first is that, by the way, there are still, you know, really popular public speaking or motivational speakers that are out there. But most often, though, the people that are motivational speakers, at least in today's world and really in all time, I guess, are people who have accomplished something very, very significant. And these things that they've accomplished that are very significant are things that very few people have ever done, right? So, I mean, and that's what kind of creates the really highly sought after motivational speakers anyway. I'll give you a good example. Here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area where I'm at, Roger Staubach was the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. I don't know how many quarterbacks there have been of the Dallas Cowboys, but I'm guessing you can probably count them on two hands max. You know, you're probably talking about six, maybe seven people in all time, maybe a little bit more, you know, for some of those quarterbacks that kind of came and went. But for the most part, you know, you've got just a handful of guys who've ever done that. So if Roger Staubach had wanted to become a motivational speaker after he left the Dallas Cowboys, he would be a fairly sought after speaker. But what he did after he left the Dallas Cowboys is he actually started a commercial real estate company and then became a gazillionaire again doing that. So he's actually had two highly successful careers. And so if you wanted to hire Roger Staubach to come out and speak at your convention, you're going to be paying, you know, probably 40 grand plus just for an hour for him to speak. So. And so most of the really popular motivational speakers are either politicians or athletes or entertainers who made it big and now who want to inspire other people to do what they did. So now you'll also find people who, you know, sailed around the world or climbed Mount Everest or survived a tragedy, something like that. You know, those kind of things. You'll find people that do motivational speaking after those kind of things. But for the most part, there are very few people out there who are motivational speakers who weren't famous before they became speakers. So keep that in mind. So the second big don't in what you don't want to do to become a professional speaker is you don't just want to regurgitate a bunch of stuff that you read or heard from other speakers. So this is kind of the second big mistake that people make when they're starting a speaking career. The thought process is something like this. Okay, so I've read The Magic of Thinking Big and How to Win Friends and Influence People, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Personality Plus, Think and Grow Rich, and I've also read the Bible. In addition to that, I've listened to over 100 hours of Zig Ziglar and Anthony Robbins and Brian Tracy and Will Smith and Joel Osteen, and I've watched about 1,000 different YouTube videos on different topics, so now I'm ready to be a professional speaker. That's a bad way to do it. Don't do that. The only thing that really differentiates a great speaker from a really poor speaker is that person's stories. If you're relying upon retelling other people's success stories, then you're never going to really make it as a professional speaker. I'll give you an example. I got hired as a speaker once at a convention, and the woman who hired me asked me a very odd and pointed question. This is as I'm setting up to speak, so it was just a weird kind of question, and it was out of the blue. And so what she said was, she said, "Exactly where, Doug, did you get the material for your speech?" And I was a little taken back by it. It was number one, it was just an odd question. But and I was going to answer her by just telling, you know, this is the stuff that I've accumulated over years from my own personal experience. But before I did, though, I kind of paused and I was thinking, why on earth is she asking me this? Because, like I said, it was just odd. And when she answered me, she kind of explained that apparently the year prior, the last convention that they had 1 year ago from the time that I spoke, the woman who was the keynote speaker or the trainer for the group during that session, the audience just absolutely loved her. She was very charismatic. She was a great speaker and everything. But apparently one of the executives for the group, because she liked the speech so much, she started doing some research to get additional information after the woman left. And she found basically the entire story with the entire information anyway, everything that this woman had kind of spoken to them, found it online, and it was attributed to another author. It was attributed to another woman who was in a similar career. And after doing a little bit of investigating, they figured out that this woman had just plagiarized the entire speech, stories and all. Basically, she was telling stories as if she had done something that she had never done. So if you do something like that, I mean, I know that's kind of the extreme and you don't really hear about stuff like that very often, but I do hear quite often speakers come out and they're just kind of regurgitating different things that they've heard on motivational speeches or they've read in a book or something like that without ever having applied that stuff in person. They haven't. They're basically taking information that somebody else has told them is a good idea, but never actually used it in their own life. And so as a result, it kind of falls flat if they're trying to deliver that as a speech. So that's the second big mistake. The third big mistake, and this is the one that I fell into, and this is the one that I would really caution you on, is you want to stay away from general topics. In the early years of the Leaders Institute, because I was trained to do leadership training when I worked at Carnegie, that was what they taught me to do. And so so when I started the Leaders Institute, that's kind of, you know, that was my background. I'd worked with Fortune 500 companies to help them create better leaders and that kind of thing. The problem was, though, is that I didn't really have a name for myself yet. Since I was starting from scratch and this was my own personal stuff, it was untested. And so I had a lot of takers in the early years. When I say a lot, I mean, it was enough to keep me. I had enough customers to keep me working and keep me busy, but it was a meager existence. I was really kind of stretching to make ends meet. And when if you think about it, the reason why that was the case is because since I was doing quote unquote leadership class, if you think about it, if somebody is a really poor leader, they're not likely to go to Google and type in the word leadership class. They're not likely to say, you know what, maybe I'm not a good leader. Maybe I should take a leadership class. It's just not something that most people do. And so during those first couple of years, I had to do a ton of outbound advertising and marketing, and I had to give a ton of free speeches. I mean, I was putting the information out there. And as a result, I was getting a few people that would reply back, a few companies that would reply back and say, oh, okay, well, you know, tell me about that. But for the most part, it was a lot of outbound stuff, and it was very expensive to create brochures and do all the stuff that I was doing back then. What I started noticing, though, was that the people that were coming through my classes, there was a high percentage of them that would say something fairly similar every time they came through, or when they came through anyway. They would say, well, I heard you were really good at helping people reduce public speaking fear, and so that's why I'm here. And so since I started hearing that over and over again, I'm like, maybe there's a market for this. And that was where the Fearless Presentations class actually came from. It came from a couple of years of listening to people come through my leadership class telling me that they were terrified to speak in front of a group. So when I created the Fearless Presentations class, within a few years of creating that class from scratch, I was doing something like 300 a year. The company just exploded with growth. And the reason why is because helping people reduce public speaking fear is a specific challenge that a lot of people have, and they will actually go out and search for a solution for that. And so as a result, we were able to kind of tap into that market pretty dramatically. So what I would encourage you to do is stay away from like general topics. Look for a problem that the people in your audience are likely to experience, and then help them solve that problem. And that actually takes us to step number one of the things that we're going to cover here today on how to you know, step by step, how to start your own public speaking career from scratch. So step number one is to start with that specific topic or area of expertise that has a very specific and defined market. So let me kind of break that down, because I know that's a lot, especially if you're driving or listening to this on the run, it can be a lot to take in. So the three components to that statement is, number one, you want to have a specific topic or area of expertise. That's what I was just talking about with the Fearless Presentations thing. In addition to that, though, you need to have a specific and well-defined market as well. So both specific and well-defined market. You have to have all three of those things. You have to have a specific topic, a specific market, and a defined market, something that you can put your finger on to know, hey, these are the people that I'm presenting this content to. If you don't have all three of those things, then you're going to spend a lot of time creating something that nobody wants or that people aren't going to buy from you. So Keep that in mind. The easiest way to, by the way, to come up with this topic is to think about the specific problems that those people in that specific audience are experiencing and look for and help them solve those specific problems. So, and it could be something really simple, by the way. Let's say, for instance, that you're a dentist. Well, what are the specific challenges that you help people with as a dentist? Well, it could be that a specific challenge that a lot of people have is that they want their teeth to be wider, or it could be that they've got a number of cavities, or it could be that they've got a crown that is very painful and they're not sure what a solution is to any of those kind of things. So basically, if you're going to create a topic that somebody would be interested in, you got to figure out who the people are in your audience and find out what problems that they face and then give them solutions to those problems. So that's step number one. By the way, I'll give you an example of this one. This really hit home with me when I was first starting out. I got a call from an engineering company in Houston who wanted help organizing what they called their shortlist meeting. Now, at the time, I had no idea what a shortlist meeting was. I had never heard of such a thing. It was just outside of my expertise. So I asked a bunch of questions, and it turns out that when a company wants to build a big construction project, maybe a commercial building or a school district is going to be remodeling a bunch of schools or something like that. Anytime that somebody's going to do a big construction project like that, a lot of times what they'll do is they will send out a request for proposal and they'll get sometimes 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 different proposals back from different companies that want that job because it's such a big amount of money that they're competing for. So at that point, the committees will take all those proposals, they'll weed through them, and they'll just start eliminating companies that don't meet the first criteria. They have a list of criteria that they're looking for. Any of them that don't meet that, they weed those out fairly quickly. And they end up with what they call a short list. So this could be 5 companies, it could be 8 companies, it could be 10 companies. But for the most part, it's shorter than the original list that they had. Anyway, if they had 40 and they've gone down to 8, it's what they call the short list. Once they get to that point, one of the things that they'll do is they'll have what they call a shortlist presentation. Well, they'll invite each one of the companies that survived the first cut in to give a presentation. And in some cases, the winner of that round, you know, if they have 8 companies and they figure out that they really like one of these companies, they'll give them that the job. And in some cases, it might be an additional weeding out process. So they're still trying to eliminate. So they're trying to come up with the top 2 or 3 at that point. Either way, though, if they don't do well in the shortlist presentation, they're eliminated and they're not even considered. So this company in Houston had called me in to help them with one of these big meetings that was coming up. And so, I mean, since I had a lot of public speaking experience, and at the time I'd had a lot of experience working in the commercial construction industry, I kind of knew the industry pretty well. I went in for an interview and they hired me to consult on this. And after I'd done the first one was kind of a learning process for me as well as for the group that I was coaching. And we did well on the presentation, but the more that I found out about the industry and what the audience was really looking for, the better I was at helping coach them. So even though we didn't get the first one, when I went in and coached the second group for a similar thing, they got it very quickly. They got that job very quickly because I knew exactly what the audience would be looking for. I knew exactly how to help these guys present in a way that was going to let them shine and show their expertise and that kind of thing. So I did that for, you know, because of that phone call that I got, I was able to kind of create that as one of my specialties in Fearless Presentations was to help these high level groups of presenters get off these shortlist presentations or win these shortlist presentations. So I created a presentation. I created a class called Getting Past the Shortlist, and I promoted that throughout the engineering construction industry. And because it was a niche within that specific industry, I had almost no competition. There was nobody else doing a class that was similar to that or a speech similar to that. So I conducted dozens of these speeches each year for about 6 years, and I made a nice little nest egg doing it. So I still do it, by the way. I still have folks that call me out of the blue, even though I don't really promote that as much anymore. But it's still one of those things that I really enjoy doing. But the thing that really made that work, though, was that it was a highly specific topic for a highly specific problem that somebody was experiencing. And as a result, I got, and by the way, it wasn't just the classes. I mean, I was speaking at the association meetings. They would hire me to come out. I wrote blog posts and newsletters and stuff like that for in the industry, because I became well known as the guy that helps people win these speeches. So it worked out really well. So step number two, once you have that great topic, now we're going to do something with it. You know, we're not just going to go out and promote ourselves as speakers on that topic, because we got no credibility yet. We have to kind of build our credibility on that topic. So once you have that great topic, step number two is you want to write about it. The thing that I hear most often on this is, okay, wait, Doug, you don't understand. I'm a good speaker, but I'm not a writer. And I always laugh when somebody says that to me, because if you actually think you're a good speaker and you're not a good writer, you're probably not very good at either. So just so you know, because the better you are at one of those things, the better you'll be at the other. And so the better you get at writing, the better a speaker you're going to be. The better you get at speaking, the better writer you're going to be. So they go hand in hand. So whether you're giving a speech or writing a blog post, you're really just communicating with a specific audience. And the method may be slightly different, but not as much as you might think. So, for instance, when I design a speech, I think about a problem that my audience has, and I come up with that audience-focused title, just like what we talked about in the previous step, or the first step number one. And then once I come up with that topic, I identify 3 to 5 concepts or steps that will help the audience solve that problem. So I'm giving them a step-by-step process, or I'm giving them some concepts that will help them solve that problem. Now, once I come up with those things, I didn't identify just tons of proof, lots of proof, stories, analogies, examples, quotes, data for each of those concepts. So if you think about it in a presentation, it could be a bullet point. Each one of those concepts might be a bullet point. If you're thinking about it in a blog post, each one of those would be like a paragraph of a blog post. But I mean, that's what I do when I'm writing a speech. When I'm writing a speech, I kind of do all those things. Well, when I'm writing a blog post, I pretty much do the exact same thing. You know, I'm going to come up with a really good title. I'm going to come up with 3 to 5 concepts that the audience needs to know, or they'll help the audience solve that problem. I'll come up with lots of stories and examples, and that's my blog post, right? So it's the same technique. My delivery might be a little different if I'm doing a live presentation versus writing something, but for the most part, it's really, really similar. So if you think about it, a blog post is really just a speech that you've written down in a WordPress website, you know, a blog. So it's like there's nothing really challenging or difficult. If you're a good speaker, you should be a good writer as well. So once you start to kind of write down your thoughts, though, when you're creating this, you want to make your blog post range between 1,000 and 2,500 words. And by the way, this is really critical in the design process, because it's helping you really clarify what the wants and the needs of your audience. The process really helps you constantly refresh and redesign your ideas and your beliefs on that topic. So if you sit down and write at least a single 1,000 word post every single week for 10 weeks, by the time that you complete your 10th blog post, you're going to understand that topic way better than what you did when you started. Your topic is going to become more precise. It's going to be more clear. The reason why this occurs, by the way, is that sooner or later, you're going to stop relying on your own past beliefs. You're going to start focusing more on doing research. What else is out there? What's new? And from my own personal experience, anyway, for every time I write a new blog post, I'm increasing my expertise in that topic exponentially. I'm creating, I'm constantly growing, I'm learning. And you can have that happen too. When you're writing these blog posts, it's going to really help you clarify your message, and it's going to help you create stuff that the audience is really looking for. So once you have the step number three, by the way, is that once you get quite a few of these things, quite a few of these blog posts, you can turn them into something even better. Like you can actually turn them into a book. So once you have at least, let's say, 10 well-researched, well-written blog posts, then in each one of them has at least 1,000 words, you've got the makings of a pretty good book. Yeah, you'll have anywhere from 10,000 minimum to maybe 20,000, up to 20,000 words already laid out in easy to read format. And the titles of those blog posts just become chapters in your book. And by the way, if you've never done something like this before, you can go to Amazon. There's two different ways to self-publish books like this for free. It doesn't cost you anything to do this. You can go to, I think it's Kindle Direct Publishing, and I'll put a link on it in the notes. If you go to fearlesspresentations.com, you should be able to find it. The one that I use is a company called CreateSpace. CreateSpace was one of the original Amazon companies. It's actually owned by Amazon now, but it was a company that Amazon used to help people create books, because back when Amazon was just selling books, folks that were authors, in order for Amazon to have more content, they would allow authors to write their own books and then publish them through CreateSpace, and then Amazon would sell them for them. So it turned out really, really well. So you will always have more credibility as a speaker if you're a published author as well. In addition to that, you've got another revenue stream, which is kind of cool. In some cases, an audience may only be able to pay a small honorarium to speak, especially when you're starting out. Especially if you're at a small group, they're not going to be able to pay a huge honorarium or pay a huge fee to get you out to speak. So sometimes you can turn those small honorariums or even a free speech into something that's fairly lucrative for you if you have a book. I'll give you an example. Like, let's say, for instance, that you're selling your book for $20 and you get an invitation to speak in front of a smaller group, let's say 100 people. Well, you can, if they don't have a huge fee to pay you, then one of the things that you can offer them is a book for every single person that's in the room. So 100 books, if you think about 100 books, $20 each, that's about $2,000 that you'll make. And the reason why you'll be able to do that in a lot of cases is because sometimes the folks who are organizing these meetings don't really have a huge speaker fee to pay. It's just a small honorarium, a couple hundred bucks, maybe $200, $300, $400, $500, something like that. But they do have material funds. So for instance, if you're going to include a book for each one of those 100 people, they can just increase the ticket price of these 100 people to get to go to the meeting by $10 or $20, and they've covered the cost of that. And so a lot of times they'll kind of do that for you. And even if they don't, even if they don't allow you or they don't want to take you up on giving a book to every single person, then a lot of times they'll let you set up a table at the back of the room. And if you tell them that you'll sit there and autograph books for them, you'll be surprised at how many people who had never heard of you before you actually spoke will stand in line and pay you $20 to buy a book if you autograph it for them. So it's just an additional way to make some income, especially when you're first starting out. So getting that first book published is really key. And by the way, once you have the 10 posts and the one book completed, Don't stop there. I mean, if you're doing one blog post every week, you know, it's not a huge commitment of time. It's writing one blog post every single week. And if you do that, then if there's 52 weeks in a year, even if you take a couple of weeks off, that's still up to 5 different books that you can write in a year. Let's just make it easier and say 3 or 4, right? So if you're writing 3 or 4 books every single year, that gives you some additional revenue streams as a speaker. Gives you a lot of credibility in the marketplace as well. So like I said, don't stop with just the first book. Keep writing. All right. So step number 4 is that, so once you have the really good topic, you've started writing blog posts, and now you've written so many blog posts that now you're starting to create books. Now you want to start your speaking career, especially with a podcast. That's what I like. That's what I would suggest people do. This was not available when I started, but man, if I'd have had my podcast or had the ability to use a podcast, I would have grown so much faster than what I did in those early years. I mean, you guys that are out there now, especially the ones that are listening to this podcast, you have it is so much easier than what I did when I was starting. So what I would encourage you to do though, is wait until you have at least, I would say, about 20 well-written blog posts. And the reason why is because when you start that podcast, it's much easier if you kind of do them in bunches. So if you can record 2, 3, 4, 5 at a time, it makes it a whole lot easier. It's less of a time commitment than kind of writing a blog post, recording a podcast. But basically, all you're really going to do is turn those blog posts that you've written into an audio version. So once you write the blog post, you just kind of you create a podcast out of that blog post. So if you have 20 to pull from, you've got good content already developed. So you won't be struggling. You know, if you're doing a weekly podcast, you won't get to a point in your podcast where you're going, oh my gosh, I've got to record my podcast this week. I have no idea what I'm going to talk about. Because if you've already got 20 blog posts and you're writing a new one every single week, you know, you're always going to have content to pull from. So that's why I would encourage you to kind of wait until you have 20. But you'd be amazed at how much more fluid and confident that you're going to become as a speaker after you've recorded 15 or 20 podcasts. Your message is going to be much sharper. Your delivery is going to be more precise. You're going to become a much better speaker by practicing on a podcast. And by the way, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this podcast kind of telling you how the mechanics of how to record one, but I'll give you a few kind of tips that I've kind of learned over in the last year and a half of doing this podcast. The things that are most important is that for a few hundred bucks, you can go out and get a really, really good microphone. You can get these on Amazon, by the way. I would say a microphone that's going to cost you maybe $150-$200 is probably going to be adequate. In addition to the microphone, though, you want to get the pop filter. It's the little, you'll see this if you ever watch somebody record, like a disc jockey or a radio person recording. They always have the big black filter that's in front of the microphone. That's the pop filter. It's to keep the P's from popping when you're speaking. And that really makes the sound a whole lot better. And then once you have those two things, you can get an audio recorder like Audacity. It's free. You can get that on. You can download it on a PC or Mac or laptop or whatever. So there's all kinds of stuff that you can use. A lot of times if you're on the Mac, a lot of folks will use like GarageBand. It's free. So there's a lot of free software out there that will help you record the audio for the podcast. This is not going to be in the podcast notes just because I didn't want to go into a lot of detail, but there are a number of different podcast software programs out there. These are pieces of software that once you upload the MP3 to that software, it will send an RSS feed out to iTunes and Spotify and all the other TuneIn and all of the different places where you can get podcasts and everything. And the reason why I'm not putting this in the notes is because there's just so many of them out there. And the one that I use is probably not going to be, it's the reason I use it is because I started using it and I'm kind of comfortable with it, but I don't think it's the best out there. So I'm not an expert at this kind of stuff, but if you want to start a podcast, there's plenty of different information, the pieces of information that you can find out on the internet and that kind of thing. So basically, once you have the 20 topics, start to record those podcasts, release them one a week. If you have 10 of them in the bag, just ready to go, then that's a good way to start, because then you can release them one at a time, one a week, and you'll have now 10 weeks to get the next batch of 10 prepared. So it makes it a little bit easier if you do it that way than do them one at a time. So the tip number five, the fifth step, and this is the last one that we're going to cover on this session, is after recording the audio for each blog post, you want to try doing some video as well. And video is always much more difficult than audio. Like I said, with audio, you really just need a good microphone, a pop filter, a laptop, and a quiet room. That's pretty much it. So that's pretty easy. Video throws a few more challenges into the works. So when you're starting out, I would suggest starting out with like Facebook Live or Instagram Stories, you know, the social media platforms. These are great for practicing your speeches because the audience expects them to be kind of amateurish, you know. In fact, the more quote unquote behind the scenes that they look, the more your audience is going to like it, right? So that kind of thing is much better in these formats. You don't want to kind of put crappy stuff up on YouTube, because that may be somebody's first impression of you. And if they're looking to hire a speaker and they see a really crappy video on YouTube, you know, it could eliminate you from being considered. So be careful about that. An easy way to create content for these videos, by the way, is just to deliver one of the main concepts. You know, be like, take a bullet point out of each one of those blog posts that you've already written and you've already done a podcast for. So you should have it real clear by the time that you move to video. And just, if you have five of those concepts in each one of those bullet points, and you've got 20, I'm sorry, five of those concepts, five bullet points in each one of those blog posts, and you've got 20 blog posts, I mean, you're talking... you got a bunch, right? So you got a hundred plus different things that you could cover in videos. There's 100 possible different videos that you could make. So I would encourage you to start on the social media stuff. Once you get really good at the live videos, then you might want to invest in better equipment and maybe some professional help to start creating some of those really good YouTube videos. That was the best investment that I ever made at the Leaders Institute, was to hire a full-time audio video guy. That's all he does for the Leaders Institute, is to do that stuff. And I know a lot of people can't do that in the beginning stages of your career. Just so you know, one of the things that I would encourage you to do is, once you start to get some of these speaking gigs, once you're actually being asked to come out and speak based on a topic that somebody's heard on your podcast or something like that, then when you start getting these requests, make sure that they are recorded. You know, a lot of times, if you're going to a convention, even a fairly small convention, they're going to have video there. And if they don't have video, go pay somebody $1,000 or $2,000 to come out and record you speaking, because now you've got some collateral material that you can give to the next organization that wants you to speak. So those are just really, really important things. Now, once you have those things, by the way, once you've kind of followed those five steps, you're now well on your way. You've got all the background completed to get started in your speaking business. Now, I know that seems like a lot of work, and it is, but once you have, you know, 20 blog posts written and you've got a podcast for each one of those 20 blog posts recorded, and you've got 40 or 50 videos, and you've got at least one printed book to sell, you're ready to start promoting yourself. And we'll cover that on next week. We'll cover how to actually promote yourself as a speaker, so that you can get people to hire you. So stay tuned. If you haven't yet subscribed to the podcast on iTunes or whatever podcast service that you use, make sure and do that, because we've got new stuff coming out every single week. Next week will be the last session on this topic, and then we're going to cover a brand new topic. Not sure what that's going to be yet, but stay tuned, because it's going to be really, really good. We'll see you next week on the Fearless Presentations podcast.
Subscribe to this podcast for new public speaking secrets each week.